Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 282, recorded January 17th, 2012. Thicker and longer lasting. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing app for small businesses that saves time and gets you paid faster. Join over 3.5 million FreshBooks users and try the service free for 30 days of unlimited use at FreshBooks.com. Be sure to let them know you heard about it on MacBreak. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by Ford, featuring all-electric and hybrid electric technologies. Learn more about the technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that's all about Macintoshes and iPhones and all that jazz. Ladies and gentlemen, I introduce the panel today, starting from my left, Mr. Andy Notko of the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth and the Chicago Sun-Times.
Good day. Hello.
Love
how
that.
It is, how it be, how it will be.
Love that picture behind you.
I know. It's been an object of fascination since I found it last week.
Do robots smoke is the question. Apparently so. And I love her hair in a braid. That is Fritz Lang's Metropolis.
Mm-hmm.
And for those listening, a scene from the production back behind the scenes. And the woman in the robot suit of Metropolis is getting a cigarette lit up. She's getting a ciggy and blow drying her. I didn't know they had blow dryers back in the 20s.
Apparently so, but they worked on like 280 volts at 130 hertz or something like that.
Is that interesting? So they were used in the movies long before they were brought to our homes.
Yeah. You just don't think about it. These images are so iconic, like the Maria robot from Metropolis. You never see, behind the scenes, someone suiting up in that robot outfit.
Yeah, there has to be. It's also, like the pictures of Kenny, what's his name, in the R2-D2 suit.
Baker.
Kenny Baker having a sandwich. And they got the head off, and he's in there, and he's having a sandwich. They're hysterical. Also with us from the UK, from Liverpool, but soon to be from here. I think he's flying out soon, I hope, for Mac World, Mr. Don McAllister of Screencasts Online.
Indeed, indeed. Hi, Leo. Thanks for having me on again. I'm coming over from Mac World. Yeah. I'll be in on Tuesday.
I saw on your path all the stuff you have to do before you leave.
Yeah, well, it's been a really busy week as well because I've just launched a new website and a new service and everything, and then I've got to create some more shows while I go away. So it's a really, really busy time for me at the minute. So,
what's the new service? What are you talking about?
Well, I've just relaunched Screencast Online. I've just relaunched the website, so it's a completely new, brand new, built from scratch website. The landing page is the same as it was last year, but all the back end, it's now a full sort of content management system, extra features for the members, easy to search. But the big thing is, two big things. One, I've introduced a new weekly iOS tutorial now, so there's two shows a week.
Oh, cool.
So both Mac and iOS completely separate. I used to get some sort of flack from existing members who were sort of, just interested in the Mac, and I was always trying to bring in iOS shows, but I always felt a bit strange about it. But now I've split them separately now, so people can choose for Mac, iOS, or both. And then I've also dropped the joining fee as well.
Really?
So that's another barrier. Yep, it's gone to monthly, quarterly, or yearly. And but I've managed to put the MacBreak Weekly discount back in place as well. So I've set up a special page, screencastonline.com/MBW, and they can read all about it there.
That is great. Well, I'm glad. Normally, we save the plug for the end of the show. I'm glad we could get it at the beginning.
I'm going to the opportunity again.
I want to. This is great. Thank you. Very kind. Screencastonline.com/MBW.
Yeah, two shows a week. So I've got twice as many shows to produce for while I'm away next week now. But it's okay.
Awesome. Also with us, Mr. Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps, pixelcorps.com, for the Guild of Multimedia Artists. And
hello, hello.
PixelCore.tv for your podcast. Anything you want to plug?
I don't have anything to plug this week. I'm just recovering from CES. We had a great time, and we are. Chris, my partner, has gone to Rwanda.
Yeah, that's all started.
Well, hopefully, I get to do one of these shows from Rwanda.
Love to hear more about that down the road.
It's very Mac breakish. It's all iMacs and iPads.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah. So
we are gathered together the week before. Now, do I call it Macworld or iWorld or both?
There's Macworld, there's iWorld, there's iFan.
What's that?
It's that's the separate track that's just for things that are cool people who use Apple and iOS devices to do cool things. Like I'm interviewing a couple of animators and producers of South Park on that stage.
And they use Max to do their thing.
They use Max to get a whole show gone together from a blank sheet of paper to actual tape handed over for broadcast in 6 days.
And I presume in your interview, you're not going to do a fanboy interview, but you're going to talk about their workflow.
We're going to be talking about how they get this thing done in 6 days. Unfortunately, we only got 45 minutes, and we're setting aside 15 minutes for Q&A because I know that there's going to be a lot of really good questions. But I did the pre-interview about an hour ago, and the first question was, is it okay if we cuss? Is it okay if we use the after 11 p.m. version of certain clips? And the answer, fortunately, according to the IDG person who's on the call, is yes.
Good. Absolutely. So you could see this will be... South Park Uncensored.
Yes, at 1 p.m. on Thursday.
Ah, I want to see that.
And since we're doing plugs at the top of the show, I do have 10 free admissions to the iFan track. So if you are listening live and you can find the correct registration page for that and you use the coupon code Andy, A-N-D-Y, you will get a free admissions to the iFan track.
Don't bother, they're all gone. Probably, right? How quick can you click? Macworld, iWorld, the ultimate iFan event. It almost feels like they can't figure out what to call it. But obviously,
it's a festival. South by Southwest. It's like, what is it? Well, it's not about Southwestern cuisine. You got your music, you got your data stuff, you got your startup stuff.
That's a good point.
You got
point.
Your armadillers.
It's a San Francisco Mac based. South by Southwest.
But not even Mac based, because you can't really say Mac based even.
They all use Macs.
It's the Apple ecosystem.
Yes.
They've changed the pricing structure as well. This new iFan pass is a lot cheaper than it used to be, and people can get into tech talks as well. So I think they're making it sort of more accessible to people by introducing this iFan concept. So it's a lot cheaper now.
This is neat. You know, it's funny. We were at CES. Sarah and I were doing iPad Today, walking around. We came to the end, there's a big eye lounge with like 28,000 square feet of stuff. We came to the, there's a big gray wall. It's like the end. Here it is. That's it. It's over. And who's standing there but Paul Kent? And it was almost like we staged it. Like the show's over. Oh, and here's Paul Kent, planner of Macworld. And he was like scribbling. He was like taking notes. Like, and I said, and I grabbed him. I recognized him. And I think he was kind of surprised, but we talked about Macworld. So Andy's going to be there. With a special South Park event, and you're doing another thing, right? Panel.
Yeah, later that afternoon, I'm going to go through Lion feature by feature and decide which features you should adopt and actually use, which ones you should adapt, which is use them, but here are ways to enhance them. And then there's the abandon file, the ones that are saying, yeah, you know what? I bet there's going to be a 10.8, and that's going to save you a lot of heartache.
I like it. And Don, will you be speaking or just visiting?
Yeah, no, I've got, I'm doing a session, I think it's on the Thursday. It's on one of the morning sessions, either Thursday or Friday. I'm doing the Hidden Secrets of QuickTime. So a 45-minute session all about using QuickTime and QuickTime captions and subtitles and stuff like that. So that should be quite interesting. And then I've got a live podcast with the Mac Roundtable guys and gals. So that should be interesting as well.
And of course, Alex, you're doing something, I'm sure.
I'm trying to. I'm not speaking there. I have a shoot that I have to go to. So I'm.
Oh, you're working there.
I'm working somewhere out of town.
We'll do iPad Today there. I don't know if we'll do any other content there, but we'll be doing. Look for us on the show floor Thursday as we wander around Thursday afternoon, and then of course Thursday night you got to come to our MacBreak meetup. This has become a tradition thanks to Myra Joyce, who is just a fan who just puts these together. Thank you, Myra.
Where is it?
God bless you, Myra. Thursday, January 26th, 6 p.m. at the Intercontinental Hotel.
It's a great hotel.
I believe it's the same place as if you were there last year. Yeah. Same place.
Same place. And I'm sure the smile on my Mac people will be there, and it'll be fun.
And you just have to walk over. It's right next to the Moscone Center.
It is. It's right there.
Right behind Moscone. Yeah.
No taxi required.
I think I'm just going to spend the night.
That's the best way to do it.
Last year, I spent the night, but I didn't have a room. I just lay down on the curb out front. It was fine.
It's a nice hotel. It was clean.
It's a clean hotel. The curb, not so. No, I was fine.
Are you in your bathrobe and your ascot?
Yes.
Testing out your Hefner concept?
Yes. It's my new concept.
Over here, Leroy Neiman is painting scenes for Macworld Expo.
Apple right, is man. The most valuable brand in the world. World. I guess it depends who you ask.
Almost. It's not the most valuable.
Eighth most valuable. Nine spots. Bigger than Disney, Mercedes-Benz, and Budweiser. What do you think the most valuable brand in the world is? Just before you look at this, just guess. What the most valuable brand in the world? Nike.
I can guess.
Ford.
In the world, I can guess.
Disney.
Really
in the world, who?
It's Coke.
Wow, you're very good. Did you know that ahead of time?
Yeah, if you're outside of the United States,
everywhere it's Coke.
You
chat room new.
Well, and they're so good. The thing about Coke in other areas, they're so good at what they sponsor. So all the events in Africa, for instance, that's when I really got how big Coke was. Is people wear like the little Coke like sweaters, like a V-neck sweater or whatever, like with the Coca-Cola logo. That's like a status thing.
Yeah,
you don't have that sweater, and they sponsor everything. They're everywhere. They're supporting all kinds
of
stuff.
When did Coca-Cola come to the UK? Have you had it your whole life, Don?
Oh, yeah, we've had it for a long time. Yeah, Coke and Pepsi. The funny thing is, though, with Coke, it's natural to ask for a Coke, but normally if the response is, well, we've only got this, I'll go, okay.
Nobody really cares. It's sugar water with some flavor. It isn't. Yeah, there isn't a huge distinction between that and anything else.
No, but I remember don't tell Coke.
I remember going to Europe in 1967, and maybe in the UK you could get it, but most of Europe you could not get Coke, and they had the weirdest variants with cinnamon on the bottom of filter out. I mean, just I remember Africola having some weird. So I think what happened, it was only available in China in the last 15 years. I think what happened is pent up demand. Of course, it's huge because it was a status symbol.
Well, it's also stable. I mean, the thing, you know, because it's such
a
big brand.
You always know what you're going to get.
When you get, like, Coke in other countries, what you know is that it's going to not make you sick. You know, and Andy, I think, would agree with me that there is a big difference between Coke and Pepsi.
This is Interbrand's Best Global Brands report. I'm not sure what it's based on. They actually quote a dollar value. The brand value of Coca-Cola is $71 billion, up 2%. IBM is number two. That's
number two.
Weird.
That one seems weird.
But you know, maybe that's because of all the advertising they do on things like the Olympics and big things like that.
I don't get that one at all.
Microsoft number three, not in the U.S. Google number four.
Everyone uses their browser.
Everybody knows Google. Worth $55 billion. That was up 27%. But Apple's the big gainer, up 58%, up nine places to number eight. And remember, Apple has traditionally never been big internationally, but in the last two or three years has just come on gangbusters.
In the radio business, we would call that number eight with a bullet.
With a bullet. What do they call on the Billboard? What do they call it? The hot
100.
Hot one. GE number five, McDonald's number six. By the way, notice how many of these companies are American? All of them.
Yeah.
Is this, now wait a minute, is this only American companies? No, blessed global brands. They're all American. Intel, Apple, Disney, and HP round out the top 10. Does that make you sad, Don McAllister, that Jaguar is not on the list?
It does mention Mercedes-Benz, but they're German. At least they're European somewhere.
Mercedes is on the list, but it's not in the top 10, yeah.
Yeah, it's not in the top 10.
Daimler.
Yeah, well, what can you do?
Budweiser's in there.
But they are global brands. I mean, you know, we have all these, you know, in Europe, so they're all recognizable names to it.
I think Cadbury should be in that list. We all know Cadbury. Are they owned by the Swiss now?
Did
Nestle buy them?
Take over. Yeah.
I think they're owned by the Swiss.
Might be Nestle. I'm not sure.
Sorry. Sorry. Anyway, I don't know. Just an interesting story. Nothing to say about that. Nothing to say.
Well, it is kind of interesting because what happens when a brand becomes a character in and of itself? You expect things of it that go above and beyond the actual things that it does. I mean, I think people aren't. IBM used to be known for personal computers, the notebook computers. Now, do they actually produce a service that any consumer actually puts their hands right on? Now they're basically down to selling services to other companies. So there's a lot to live up to there.
It is a challenge. I mean, if you're Tim Cook to know that, I mean, I think anybody who runs Apple, this was the problem after Jobs left that his successors, John Sculley, Michael Spindler and Gil Emilio all faced, which was that Apple had was a brand with a life of its own.
Right.
That it transcended the person running it. It transcended their ability to steer the ship. There was, you know, and that's because of us. That's because of Apple fans, I think. And Tim Cook, I think, a good successor, although I just saw an article. Where did I see it that said Scott, probably some rumor and blog, Scott Forstall is the
they said he's
CEO apparent.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know if.
But remember, Tim Cook's options go for the rest of his life. Remember last week there was talk about from the LA Times saying that Tim Cook made $378 million a year. Not true. It's all stock options. 1 million shares of restricted stock options worth $376 million. His salary is $900,000.
Did you see the size of his house?
No.
There was an article about it. It's like 2,200. No, it's like 2,200 square feet or 2,600 square. It's not. They said you wouldn't notice it driving by. I mean,
no,
it's,
that's
it's
smart.
Nice,
that's
but
smart.
It's not. He said it's like a third the size of Steve's.
Yeah, if you have a fancy house, it's just asking for trouble. It's asking for home invasions. It's asking for people, friends and relatives coming by saying, "Can I have some money?" Don't do it. Trust me.
Small houses.
After we bought the mansion, everything changed. We had to put up fences everywhere. $900,000 performance bonus, $16,000 in contributions to his retirement account and life insurance. But the stock options, and this is my point, will be vested over 2 5-year periods, first half 2016. So if he wants this $376 million, he's got to wait for the first half 2016 and then 2021, 10 years
right
for the second half.
I think those are good. I think that's it's a lot of money. I mean, it's worth theoretically a lot of value. But what you're seeing is that's a responsible way to handle high levels of compensation.
I agree.
Where you're thinking long term. You have to think about where is my brand going to go for the next 10 years, not what am I going to do with it next year.
Well, that means the board wants him to stick around, I guess, is my point. That the board is not thinking of him as a temporary CEO. He's the CEO for 10 years.
It's very much a vote of confidence, I think. And you know, it's not been a snap decision for them as well. I mean, he's sort of been there for a long time. And I think the past 4 or 5 years, obviously with the turn of events and what was likely to happen, I think that's the fact that they've come up with these stock options straight after, and, you know, it's for a 10-year period, they really have got, you know, huge confidence in his abilities and how he's going to move the company forward.
Yeah. It's also a pretty clear message to the stockholders and the public that this is not going to be revolving door CEOs, because, like you said, Leo, Apple went through that before, and boy, did they start to go right into the old flusher after that. So this is a statement saying, no, we're going to keep the exact same sort of management that we had before. We're going to have one guy at the top, but there's not going to be a power struggle, and we're not looking to replace somebody after 16 months.
Now, CBS made a mistake, I think, here. I'm looking at this CBS article. It says that Tim Cook already has 13,754 shares in Apple. They say that's worth $580 million, unless Apple just went up a lot.
Yeah.
I think that's
for some reason I thought it was $100 million.
It's not even that much. If Apple's $423 a share, it's $5,817,000. It's not going to.
Well, 13,000, yeah, that's not.
Yeah, it's not walk away money. It's Scott Bourne money.
but the question is, how is he going to live up to this? He's being paid 990,000 times more than Steve Jobs was, doing the exact same job. We're going to see a 999,000 increase fold in performance.
Steve was there for other reasons than money, don't you think? Tim doesn't own 3% of Disney.
7%, so, I think.
7?
Yeah,
and don't forget, they gave Steve a jet. They gave Steve other stuff besides money.
A jet.
A jet's not so bad.
If you gave me a jet, I'd be quiet for a while.
I'd stay at Twit if they'd give me a G5. And, you know, it's not.
We should get together and rent one together. Closet. I'll mail it to you. If you keep those hits on coming.
It's not the jet. It's the fuel. Forget just to
get you.
It's G5 and a lifetime supply of fuel. That's what I'm holding out
exactly.
for. I'm not going to get it, but that's what I'm holding out for. Let's take a break. Come back with more because I got to pay for that G5. And then we'll talk about the rumors. Boy, the rumors are hot and heavy, and we've got an Apple event coming up Thursday.
I'm pretty excited about it. We were like ho-hum a couple weeks ago, but
we'll talk about what that means. And then the iPad 3 rumors and the iPhone 5 rumors are hot and heavy, so we're going to talk about all of that coming up in just a second. Before we talk about that, I want to say hello, small business owners. You know how you get from a small business owner to being a big business owner?
Cash flow.
Money! And the trick is, and this, you know, I knew this is when I started off in business, is you got to do the invoices, right?
It's It's not what you make or how much you make. It's when you make it.
It's when you make it. It is. It's all about cash flow.
Oh, I don't want to talk about it.
So I was so lazy. I hated invoicing so much. I would invoice not monthly, which you're supposed to do, but like when I thought about it, which is usually every 6 months to a year. And of course, my clients would go, "I'm not paying you. That was it. That was last year, dude." So this is when I found. Actually, it was Amber MacArthur told me about this. FreshBooks.com. Her business had been using it for a while. I started in 2004. It changed my life. If you're a small business, this online invoicing system is fantastic. You could join 3.5 million folks who use it since I started in 2004. You get paid better. You get paid faster. Think about all the time you spend creating invoices, dealing with the paperwork. That's all gone. In fact, if you do hours, billing by hours, they have an app. There's an iPhone app, but there's also a web app that will not only keep track of the hours, put it right in the invoice. So you don't have to do any, figuring. They handle all the currencies, which makes it very easy. What happens is you create the invoice, you put your logo on it, looks very professional, email it to your clients. It's a couple of clicks of the mouse in most cases. It's very fast. They get a PDF, but more importantly, they get a button that says pay right now with a credit card, PayPal, or I think there's 11 electronic payment services. That means your clients, it's not that they don't want to pay you. They're just lazy like me, and I'll pay them. We're going to do it all at once. See, if there's a button, they just go click. In fact, you can even set it up to do it automatically. Invoice and pay. So then there's completely friction-free. Your accountant will love the professional organization around tax time. It's all done for you. Automated late payment reminders. You can send printed invoices. I had some old school clients that wanted printed invoices. No problem. FreshBooks will print, stamp, and mail them to your clients, complete with a return envelope. And you pay extra for that, but that's worth it, believe me, for those clients. And all of this free for the first 30 days. How about that? I want you to go to FreshBooks.com and try it today. FreshBooks.com. 30 days of unlimited use. Every feature, clients, staff, everything with no limits. But do tell them you heard about it on Mac Break. If they ask, if they don't worry about it. FreshBooks.com, making online invoicing easy. Taking your small business, making it a big business.
I did my homework, by the way.
What?
And listen to This American Life.
Oh, I forgot.
That is like easy homework, too. It's easy homework.
It's a great show. Oh, I completely forgot.
This American Life, by the way, is, there's a lot of good shows done all over.
Not last week, but the week before, they had Mike Daisy, who is a friend and a great monologist. He does a one-man show. He's an Apple, self-confessed Apple fanboy. His most recent show was about Steve Jobs,
right.
Good and bad. Somebody sent him pictures of the workers.
No. He found it on the phone.
Oh, he found it on the phone. They had taken pictures on his phone.
It was either him or somebody else had shown him these pictures that they basically had an iPhone that had left the, there were a handful of pictures that they had it was just test photos. They were just testing to make sure that the camera worked. But he saw like little bits of inside the Foxconn or whatever factory
Foxconn.
They were finishing it. And he just kept on thinking about it. And so then he went over and did a little research. And it was, before we get into the details of it, as a listening experience, as always, This American Life is amazing.
Best radio show in the world.
But as a listening experience, this monologue, he does this so well. It's so enjoyable to watch and to listen to.
He performs all over the country. He's Seattle-based, but he performs all over the country. He's really, if you ever get a chance to see Mike Daisy, he's hysterical.
Anyway. So it's worth listening, no matter what you think about all this stuff. Just listen to it.
Well, that's what I like about this. So This American Life, not only, then they did the dialogue, but then they came back and they had their reporters go and investigate and validate the claims. So can you bottom line it for those of us who didn't listen? Sorry.
Working conditions are pretty rough. You talk about Senjin, which is it was, I guess, rice paddies, 30 years ago
now,
or whatever.
13 million people.
14 million that no one knows about. And that's where basically everything on this table is made. The conditions are, they're very long hours. People are working in very, oftentimes pretty rough conditions. And I think that this comes, I want to say that, I found it specifically interesting. One of my first jobs out of high school was, assembling electronics components. So I'm very familiar, and it was long hours. And we, worked in I don't think probably nearly as bad a condition as he's talking about here, but it was still, that is that process is dirty.
13
year olds
messy. In there, young kids. Yeah. Now, I should point out, Apple takes all the heat for this.
Everybody.
But everybody uses this, Foxconn. Kindles are made there. I mean, any consumer electronics device you buy is made, in almost every case, in China, at Foxconn, but in a similar
factory.
And
in this city.
I mean, in Shenzhen, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it's the, I mean, this is where it all happens.
Now, to Apple's credit, they've joined the Fair Labor Association, the FLA. This is an organization that's been around for 12 years. It was started by Bill Clinton. Nike, in response to all the heat it's been taking for its workers, Nestle are also members. Apple has, for the first time ever, in response, not only joined this, but listed its suppliers.
Hasn't listed where the suppliers are. It just listed a list of
who
names. You know, it's like, here they are.
Well,
you know, you guys
have
to go deal
this
with
gives, this gives a, yeah, gives a intrepid a reporter a chance to go out and yep. dig. And to Apple's credit, I mean, look at Amazon hasn't done this. A lot of companies that use these factories has not done this. So Friday they listened. They listed all their suppliers. They also had a report detailing troubling practices inside many of the giant suppliers. Audits, for instance, revealed that 93 supplier facilities had records indicating over the half the workers exceeded a 60-hour work week. 108 facilities did not pay proper overtime as required by law. This is from the New York Times.
Overtime is required by law in China?
Whose law? I don't know.
Yeah, I was kind of
in 15
curious,
facilities, really? Apple found foreign contract workers who had paid excessive recruitment fees. This is very common in other countries. I know in Dubai, they'll recruit people from India and China to come to Dubai to build.
Yep.
They'll pay a big recruitment fee. When they get there, their passports are removed.
Yep.
And they, in effect, are indentured servants. Slave labor.
Which they're not claiming that too much of that's.
But 15 facilities.
Okay.
Apple has said it mandated changes at those suppliers. Some show improvements. Many types of lapses remained at general levels that have persisted for years. So this is the first time Apple has done this. For a long time, labor rights groups have been asking that they do this. Apple has resisted, citing the firm's culture of secrecy.
Right.
Okay.
As far as of them not telling anybody about where.
If you know who supplies and who makes stuff for Apple, you can find out what Apple's doing.
Right? Exactly. I think they've been trying to keep people away from knowing, you know, this is where all those leaks come with, where you see parts of components for the next iPad or the next iPhone. And I think that they just didn't want the press, you know, about what's going on there. I think that that's the. And I think that one of the challenges for Apple, I think, is that many of the other electronics that we get, that we buy, we know that the margins are razor thin. We know that these companies, you know, are working sometimes in operational margins of, you know, single percentage points. I think that the challenge that Apple has, because the common thing is, well, if we improved all the conditions, all of our electronics would cost more. The problem that Apple has is we all know that they're working on a pretty big margin. I mean, most of their equipment is running at a, you know, they are selling it at a, you know, and they have a little bit of money in the bank. I don't know what the last check was, but it was
a few billion here or there.
You know, a few billion here and there. So I think 87.9 billion as of last quarter, probably 90 billion when they do the next quarter next week. The issue is that they're making money hand over fist. The question is could they vastly improve the quality of all these lives by cutting that margin on their iPhone by $5 or $10 per unit? Would that make a sizable difference? I think that's the challenge that Apple has that other electronics companies don't have, and why they stick out is because their margins are so much larger than most of the electronics industry.
And Steve Jobs famously telling President Obama at that dinner in Silicon Valley, hey, the big problem in this country is that it's so hard to build a factory. There's so many regulations.
Right.
I mean, it's clear that they like this minimal regulatory environment in China. It makes stuff cheap.
Right.
Andy?
I was just going to say, I was talking to somebody trying to get some more insight about it. This is a person who is a consultant to companies about labor relations. And he was trying to explain to me that there's very little upside to voluntary disclosure of this type because there's no way to give an adequate answer to the treatment of workers. Even if Apple were to build plants to completely domestically source every single manufacturing part of this device, of these devices, you really can't pay them enough to led it to for an outsider to believe that, yes, I believe that these workers are being treated fairly, especially when you're talking about the sort of production that Apple does, where they have to come up with millions and millions and millions of these copies, copies of these devices under a fairly short short schedule. So the state of labor around this world is pretty deplorable. It's just less deplorable in the United States than it is in China.
Right. And maybe Apple, with its vast clout and let's hope its conscience, can improve things. Yeah. Tim Cook said Apple has used its – he wrote an email to Apple employees in which he said Apple has used its influence to improve living conditions for the people who make its products. He says, to meet our requirements, many suppliers have renovated their dorms or built new ones altogether. If this is a little bit like the I'm going to work within the system thing. But I have to say, given that there's no way Apple's going to move all of its manufacture to the U.S., I would love to know. I would love somebody like iFixit to do a guess, at least, of what it would cost if an iPhone were built in the U.S. instead of China.
Right.
When I talked to Ford at CES, one of the things Mulally, the CEO, was very proud of is that their small car manufacturer, much of it had moved back to the U.S. He said it was not economical to build small cars in the U.S. We moved that offshore, and we've moved a lot of that back.
Well, and the other thing to know for people to think about also is that as you improve these living conditions, a lot of reason that we use human labor is because they are cheaper than the machines. I was in a
That's interesting.
So when I worked in this electronics fabrication company, we built stuff for mine safety and stuff like that, and the minimum wage went from like $3.25 to $3.75 an hour. I mean, this is way back in the day, the 80s, and 30 people were laid off. Like just that minimum wage jump from 50 cents. What happened was
it's very complicated.
Someone looked at it and just said, now the machine that we've been avoiding buying is now cheaper over the next 2 years if we just buy this machine. So they bought this machine and let go everybody else.
That was the switch.
And so we all got paid more, but 30 people weren't no longer, there.
Sorry, Leo. One of the things that confused me about, because I did listen to at least the first 40 minutes of that show, I'm still sort of making my way through it, was, two things really. One, there was discussions about how the companies actually shield the suppliers away from the true picture. And I think that's quite difficult for Apple to go in and actually see what the real picture is. Even no matter how much influence they have, the guy was saying there's stories of when the external people are coming in, and not necessarily Apple, but just external customers were coming in, they would actually clear the lines of the young people and put the old people on, and sort of hide things from them. So there's that aspect of it. But also, I was quite surprised how much emphasis was made, as Alex says, how much is actually done by hand. Because whilst I can appreciate that, the cost of the labor is negligible in China because of the way things work, but on these devices, they're so tiny. I really would have thought there would have been a higher level of automation to actually make these products. But basically, the report was saying, they're literally handmade, which I found a little bit strange because of the scale of the devices and how intricate they are.
Typically, there's an assembly process. So you have most of the surface mount stuff as a machine. So you program the machine. As I said, I have a little bit of experience in this area. So you program the machine, and then the boards pop out, and the machine does it really fast. Just picks them up and sticks them into place, and it actually does a surface solder. It goes through this little thing that heats it up. So that all goes through. But to assemble the parts, to put all these pieces in and pop them together, and all those things that can't, that stuff is much more complicated. And but if you look at the car manufacturing, I mean, that's the thing. You walk into these big car manufacturing now, and you think there's going to be hundreds of people, and there's robots.
Yeah,
and that's why they can move it back to the United States is not because they're hiring lots and lots of people.
It's
that most of it's automated. And I think in this century, I think that the issue that we have now is that. Danger.
Lexus is made without human hands entirely.
Yeah, I mean,
a Lexus plant in Japan.
Job stability is I think going to machines are more of a danger than overseas at this point.
Let me also ask the question. I think it would make a big difference if these workers were coerced or forced or tricked into working there. But if they're voluntarily working there, even if they're making $110 a month, that says something. That means that...
Well, it's a lot more than everybody else.
Well, that's exactly... It might mean that this job that we would, turn our nose up at is a desirable job considering the economics of China. Now, I do have a
It's still not an excuse not to be, you know, to pay that fair wage and so
on and
so forth. I agree.
Now, how much, okay, we asked how much more would you think it would cost to make it in America? Harvard Business Review has an article by Umair Haque, who quotes the Sloan Foundation. They estimate that it's about, it'll be 20 to 30% more to buy an iPod or an iPhone if we're made in the U.S. That would be roughly, for an iPod Classic, $58 more. Not a huge, not the jump, not double, not triple, 20 to 30% more.
And I'll say as a consumer, I'm probably not the same, you know, this is not, I'm not the right person, but if I knew that it was being made by, you know, with those fair wages or in the United States or whatever, I'd pay an extra $55.
So that's one question. It's not as this surprises me, and thank you for the chat room for recommending this article. It isn't maybe as now it's from 2009, but I don't think it's probably any different today. It isn't that much more expensive. An evil iPod Classic costs $249. A good iPod Classic $307. I love this. The evil iPod Touch $229. The good iPod Touch $287.
The evil. Really?
It's so complicated. I would probably prefer to spend a little bit more. I mean, there are, you know, American Apparel only makes this stuff in the U.S. I think there are places where you can go to get American-made goods. I think Apple could conceivably offer this as a, I mean, maybe they should be doing this. It certainly would help our economy.
As a build-to-order?
Well, I think that the
yeah, maybe as a build to order, press the button, buy American.
The complexity of things being done overseas, though, is also dealing with our tax laws, because there's an enormous amount of money that Apple has overseas, and most of these corporations have overseas, that because our corporate taxes are a little higher than a lot of other countries, and so they keep their money overseas. So doing it overseas isn't just about the cost of the goods. It's also about where that money is and where they can keep it.
Well, think about this. Don't take it overseas. Maybe instead of the 20 to 30% increase the prices 15% and pay the workers in China better. What about that?
I think that would make sense. But I bet you that having these, they're making so many of these iPhones, I think that you're really looking at a difference of $4 or $5. I don't think it's 15%. I think it's 5%. Would suddenly change. That's an incredible amount of money that could be spent on, you know, worker environmental improvements.
Also, Apple's in a position that other manufacturers aren't into. They make the only hardware that can run the operating systems that their customers actually want to use. And Android, for an Android phone, a differential of $10 per unit is just astronomical, because it'll send so many of your customers to another phone that's almost exactly the same and runs the same software. I don't think there are very many people, myself included, who would go for a fair trade Android tablet as opposed to an iPad, which does what I need it to do much, 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 much better than any Android device. So, if Apple decided to say, during the unveil of the iPad 3 or the next iPhone, if they said, we are increasing, traditionally where these things cost $199, $299, and $399, we are increasing our prices by 10%, but here is what we are buying for that extra 10%. We are buying extra work shifts. We are buying better screening of hiring practices. We are buying more on-site monitors so that it's not just, oh, quick, hide the little kids because the inspector's coming. We'll have better oversight. We think that our customers, who appreciate not only the way that our devices function and the way they look, we also think they appreciate the way that the workers are treated. I think everybody would fall in line for that.
I think it'd be great marketing.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I think that Apple is one of the few companies that could do it because, again, they have some margin to give up, you know, and they also have,
they can afford it.
And they have the kind of people who buy a Mac or an iPhone or an iPad are oftentimes not the ones that are looking for the cheapest version of whatever they can get.
Exactly.
And so they can afford to bump it up a little bit and turn it into a marketing process.
I think it'd be kind of, let's encourage Apple to do that. Yeah. Do a build to order.
It is important. One thing I will say is that they got into FLN, the Fair Label, or is it FLA?
I'm really glad.
Fair
FLA.
Label Association.
Yeah.
And here's what's important about that is that this is the issue is that Apple by itself, doing whatever they want to do, will have very little impact because the percentage of electronics built in the world or built out of this area, they are 1%, 2%, 3% of all of the electronics built in that area in China. So without them backing this up and getting all the manufacturers together, nothing's going to happen. You know, they could say all they want about fair labor, but Foxconn, and Apple's not their only, we have this thing like Fox, people committing suicide in Foxconn. I don't think Apple is their only client. You know, they're making a lot of things for a lot of people. And so the thing is that Apple just putting the, you know, putting the brakes on is not necessarily going to have the same leverage as empowering FLA to, you know, get, pull everybody together. Apple joining FLA and doing this is a great encouragement, a leadership position to bring other people, other companies into that and get everyone playing by the same area. And it's interesting. I think that what's interesting, we're seeing this. One of our other clients is the International Seafood Sustainability Foundation. And what's interesting is to watch industry trying to find a way to get, you know, whether it's tuna or electronics or everything else, you have the industry actually trying to get regulated. They're trying to get together and fix the problems that they have because they can't get the government to do it for them. You know, and it's a very inverted thing in some of these supply areas because the supplies are so fragmented and there's so many different players that you have to get everybody together. And it's almost impossible right now to make that happen. And so I definitely applaud Apple for joining the FLA and starting to push this down the pipe.
Meanwhile, in some sort of weird irony, Apple's closed its 5 Apple stores in China.
Oh my gosh.
Because there's such demand in China for these phones, which are made in China, shipped to California, then shipped to, I don't know, maybe they don't make a trip back.
$800, I heard, is what it costs in China to buy one.
Now remember, the Foxconn employees are getting $110 a month.
Yeah.
A month. So what's apparently been happening in China, some huge percentage of Apple's goods are sold by those 5 stores. There are 5 Apple stores in China. What's been happening in China is that the plutocrats, or whoever it is that is buying these phones, hire workers from the country. They bus them in to get in line for them. Mm-hmm. And they pay them 15 renminbi, the Chinese currency, 15 RMBs, if they stay in line. If they don't get the phone, they only get 10 RMB. They only get the food allowance. So when Apple closed its doors and the guy with the megaphone comes out of the Apple store saying, sorry, we're not going to sell iPhones, this is what happens. I guess these workers brought eggs. Maybe that was their lunch.
And they're 1,000-year eggs, too.
Yeah, you didn't. Look at the crowd. This is the Beijing Apple store. And just rioting. Well, maybe not rioting. Just a little disgruntling.
Yes.
Grumble, grumble.
Grumble, 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 grumble. They're gruntled. That's a large crowd. And so somebody's buying these iPhones in China. I think it just shows that the disparity of income is everywhere, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I know that in... when they opened, when they started selling cell phones in DRC, you know, the Congo, they thought, oh, it'll be a slow ramp up. They sold 60,000 phones in the first week. I mean, it's there, you know, and that's
is it a status item? Is that one?
Oh, it's a huge, and that's just general phones. This isn't Apple. The thing is, Apple all over the world, everywhere I travel, outside of the United States, I think in the United States, in a lot of ways, it's just like kind of everyone has one now. Around the world, especially when you go into the emerging world, nobody has Macs and nobody has iPhones. And so, especially an iPhone or an iPad, I could have paid for my trip to Africa every single time if I had just taken 10 iPads or 10 iPhones and just thrown them in my bag and brought them in, because they'll pay me 2 or 3 times what I paid for them.
Now, ironically, you could still buy these iPhones online and through Unicom, which is a Chinese...
They didn't want you to come into the store anymore.
It's just too dangerous.
Bad for PR. That's what it was. It's big crowds.
So it's official. The iPhone is the OxyContin of personal electronics. It's too much hassle and security to actually stock them in the store.
Right. Right.
Yeah, the gray market value in Hong Kong, this is in October before this happened, was $1,350. So roughly twice the price of the U.S. price. And people were, you know,
actually,
buying as many as you could.
It was 100 RMB. Mm. Which is like a month's pay for $16 for getting in line for that phone. So that's a lot of money.
Set, couldn't you? Yeah, because about not getting the phone, it's that fee that they're
it's
not
the
going to get that made them upset.
Yeah, yeah. These guys aren't going to get the phone. They're standing in line for others. Wow, and we thought demand was high here. Same thing happened last year with the iPad 2.
And it'd be like, yeah. I mean, to put it in perspective, it'd be like someone saying, I'll pay you $1,000 in the United States. I'll pay you $1,000 to stand in line, and then you get to the line, and then they shut it down.
Phone. I'd be pissed.
And you've been waiting for all night, and this is going to be your monthly whatever. And you'd be
throwing
stuff around. I mean, that's the issue.
Apple is almost 25% of the. Look at this.
So someone else did. There's some other math done. I think by Ars Technica or someone else that's noted that graph wasn't completely accurate.
Oh,
so
this is from Deutsche Bank.
Yeah, there's another one that they think that they combined it. There's a second one. There you go. That graph is more accurate.
Apple Outsider ran the numbers and got 15% Apple market share with iPads added in. Hey, that's still fine.
Yeah.
I still would be happy. Oops, too big. So Apple is the light blue. This is simmering along under 5% until first quarter 2010. Then,
you know what they call that? Steve's revenge.
Steve's revenge. In fact, they're right up there with HP. How come HP still up on top?
Because I thought they gave away the PC business.
Oh, right. They fired that guy.
They apparently did hurt their sales, HP sales, considerably this year. The apothecary effect, it's going to be called from now on. Announce you're getting out of the business, then don't.
Yeah, that's not a good business model.
I think like 18% of sales down. Stupid. Acer tumbling. Dell tumbling. The only other strong one is the Chinese Lenovo.
And the other thing that I thought was interesting is that in another article, and I can't remember where I saw it, but they said that business, you know, business sales and business workers now, up to 12% of them are only using iPads.
Wow.
You know, that's the thing is so when we say it's a stretch to call an iPad a computer, a lot of these folks are moving away. Like they don't need, and I work with a lot of business clients, and mm-hmm. you're seeing more and more of them just show up with their iPads. They don't want to deal with the
laptop. Bundle the iPad with PCs? With, you know, I think so. You think it's all, computers?
When you look at what an average business user is using it for, they're using it for they're running their their email, they're running their web browser, they're running probably usually some kind of management system, so like a Salesforce or whatever when they're, that type of interface, and those interfaces are all built for the iPad now. So when you look at what they're doing with it on a day-to-day basis, they don't, you know, especially when they're out in the field, they just don't need it. And I think that it is a replacement, not for everybody, but for many people from a notebook.
Yeah, I got a shock this week. My brother-in-law, he's a dyed-in-the-wool Windows guy, and he's always used Windows laptops and PCs, and turned up at the house yesterday with an iPad. He had the choice of a new notebook or an iPad, and he went for the iPad. So, of course, that's the support, me on for support now. But I was really shocked, to be honest, because he just came from left field. I just didn't understand, you know, I'd not really been coaching him about it, but he'd sort of been hearing about the iPad and understood it could do all the things that he wanted to do, and it was cheaper than buying a new notebook, so he decided to plump for the iPad.
I'm really curious to get my hands on. ASUS has their new Transformer Prime tablet, which is, the bad news is that it's an Android tablet, but the good news is that it's quad-core, like the latest CPU. The big deal is that you've seen these keyboard cases for the iPad that does kind of a really lame sort of insert so that it will kind of look like a laptop. It'll have a keyboard, but it's not big enough to really treat it like a real keyboard. But hey, it'll look like a laptop. The Transformer, when you put it all, when all said and done, you get nearly a full-size keyboard plus a battery that actually powers the slate so that you'll get 18 hours worth of life plus a trackpad. Plus, it really does make it into, as the name implies, a Transformer. You can get undock it as a tablet or actually have it as a hinged notebook machine. So
I've played with the predecessor to this. It was pretty damn impressive.
It is pretty damn good. I think they've really done a good job building it. And I wonder if Apple's going to look at graphs like that one and also look at how well devices like the ASUS actually perform in the field and decide maybe it's time for us to have to revisit the idea of a keyboard dock, given that the first one was, you know, such a load of donkey's kidneys. And maybe we should do something that's more formally for people who really do want to use their iPad as their one traveling machine.
Yeah, I've tried to use some of those cases with the Bluetooth keyboard that's a case, and
they can't really type on that. The only possible solution that I found is standard Apple Bluetooth wireless mm-hmm. keyboard, the in-case origami case for that keyboard, which not only will protect the case when you've got it in your bag, but also unfolds into a nice easel that holds the iPad perfectly. Mm-hmm. I've yet to see a single iPad keyboard case that you can type on with more than one finger, more than two fingers for more than like 23 minutes. It's just no good.
Yeah.
Plus it's quad core Tegra.
That Tegra 3 is, it's a Holland mother. You can't deny that it's one Holland
it's
mother.
It's beautiful too. I mean, this brushed metal, I mean, it's just gorgeous.
Yeah. I'm I'm really curious to see what 2013 happens. I think that for Google to ever really compete with the iPad, they have got to get their stuff together to a degree with which they have never demonstrated their ability to get their stuff together before. But if they can start putting out half-decent tablet apps, that could really be a problem for Apple and the iPad, because people don't have the same sort of immersive attachment to an iPad that they would have to their notebook. I mean, if my MacBook were to be 20% not as good as any alternative, that's a huge, huge problem for me. That'd probably cause me to switch to some other operating system. But if there were something that were 80% as good as the iPad, but were 150% better at simply being a really lightweight mobile computer, that would be awfully tempting.
Yeah, because you still get the tablet. You're right, though. They're way behind both on operating system and apps. I'm a little underwhelmed with Ice Cream Sandwich. It's an improvement, but it's not enough of an improvement to really threaten the iPad.
Yeah, I've been working on my Ice Cream Sandwich review because I keep having to tone it down a little bit more, because the first one was about 2,000 words of, oh, for the love of God, people, you're being paid to write an operating system here. What have you been doing with the past 2 years of your lives?
It does feel like they should hire somebody who's good at user interface.
They need. I was looking at, they released their user interface guidelines for the comprehensive user interface
guidelines.
That might
make a change.
I think it just documents to the degree to which they don't get it. Right. There's one page I was looking at in particular, because I, just like so many other people, were trying to figure what does the back button that's part of the system deck of buttons at the bottom of the screen, what does that actually supposed to do? And to try to illustrate that, they put a typical Android-based a photo album app on one side of the page. On the other side of the page is the similar kind of thing that we do for the iPhone. And they're trying to demonstrate why their way is better and how their way works. And all I can think of is I'm looking at the iPhone screen and I'm seeing a very clear, uncluttered display. I know exactly what everything does. There is a back button at the top of the screen that I know is attached to the application and not to the operating system. Furthermore, that button is labeled, so I know exactly where I'm going to go if I tap that button. On the Android side, I've got at least two back buttons. One of them looks like it was just like the left caret symbol. It doesn't look like it's an actual active button. The bottom one looks like it could be a refresh button. It looks like it could be a back button. It could be a system back to the previous application I used button. I really am starting to think that it's not that Android is a complete disaster, but they've entered the phase of complexity where for the next edition, they're going to have to kind of start all over again with three people in one conference room for one whole month, going from start to finish, throwing out things that don't work and adding new coherence to the OS, because Microsoft is going to probably already surpass them, not in unit volume, but certainly in sophistication for mobile operating systems.
Yeah, and Windows Phone's awesome.
Yeah, and they're just going to get their lunch handed to them unless Google is comfortable with just being the free operating system that people aren't really aware that they're using and don't really like. They just like the fact that they've bought this piece of hardware with whatever operating system on it. If they're happy with that, all power to them. But if they actually want to be a force in operating systems and mobile, then this is not the operating system that's going to give it to them.
You and I disagree a little bit on that. I mean, I actually use Android and love it. And I miss not having a back button on the iPhone. I agree that the behavior is somewhat inconsistent, but it's consistent enough to me that it's really handy. I use it constantly.
It just bothers me that there's sometimes I'll be looking at a screen that has what appear to be three different back buttons on it at the same time.
Well, that's a problem more in Ice Cream Sandwich than it is in previous versions, which had hardware buttons. And right. I have to say, I think that they made a mistake on that. I've said that before, because buttons that move around and are unpredictable are not good user interface design. I have to think they did it not for UI purposes, but to make these phones less expensive. And that's just not a good reason to get rid of buttons.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you start looking back at how brilliant so many of the small touches on the iPhone are. The idea that there is exactly one physical software button on there, one that will actually interact with the operating system directly, as opposed to just, volume and mute and stuff like that. There's only one button like that, and it's instinctively, after your first hour of using the iPhone, you know that any time that I want to go back to home base or anything that I want to do something that affects the device itself, the root level operating system, as opposed to the application that I'm in right now, it's this one mechanical button and nothing else.
Yeah, but my problem with that is, yes, that's true. It's consistent. This is exactly the trade-off. It's consistent, but it often does what I don't want to do, which is pull me out of the app. Then I have to go back in the app, whereas what I really wanted to do was go to the previous page of the
app.
You
know, I find myself naturally, like I want to go to something, like I'm in something that I want
to
back up.
To it.
And I naturally just jump out of the app. I'm like,
that's your only choice.
Right, that's...
But and we have that, you know, Android has that. They have a home button.
Yeah.
But I think having a back button, I think Google should pay more attention to making the back behavior more consistent and more predictable. But I have to say, I love the back button, and when I don't have it, I miss it. But anyway... I don't want to go on and on because you and I have had this conversation a million times. I agree with you. Ice Cream Sandwich is a bit of a disappointment and a bit of a mishmash, and they do need to do a better job. But I am going to get that Transformer Prime. I'm going to buy it because I have a feeling that that's a tablet I will use a lot just for the fact that it's got a keyboard.
I'm hoping Asus says they're going to be sending me one. I'm actually hoping it arrives in time for me to take it with me to San Francisco.
That'd be nice.
Because it'll be tempting to just travel with the iPad and just the Transformer.
I'll make you a deal. We'll fly you out a day early so you can bring it to MacBreak Weekly and all about Android. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, yes, we will get to the rumors. We know that there's a Thursday event, Apple event. We'll talk
very
about
exciting.
What they might be talking about and why Alex thinks this is exciting when the rest of us are going.
And, very exciting.
And iPad 3 and iPhone 5 rumors. Before we do that, though, let's talk a little bit about my friends at Ford and their new electric vehicles and hybrid electric, which I call plug-in. So Ford has announced the 2012 Ford Focus Electric. I've been talking about that for a while. I'm on the waiting list. That is coming very soon. That's a 100% electric system. And in 2013, they're going to do the C-Max Energy plug-in hybrid. They've also announced plug-in hybrids on other vehicles in the Ford line. I love plug-in hybrid because you still have a gas engine, but you can run on electricity only for 15 miles. So if you're just driving around town, you're all electric. But when you need to go farther, which I often do, your hybrid kicks in. So they say 100 miles to the gallon. I mean, it could be a lot more. Could be a million, infinite number of miles to the gallon if you only go 15 miles.
I love the idea of being able to be able to plug in, you know, and know that I can run. I like having the back end, like I'm going to do a long trip to L.A. and I know I can still put gas in it. But I love the idea that I could try to live my entire life inside of an electric, you know, existence.
So you get the best of both worlds.
Here's the thing that's interesting is that most of the studies show is that, you know, 90% of people very rarely, you know, only occasionally go over 70 miles in a day. So
which all electric is sufficient for.
Yeah.
And as we get more and more electric charging stations, you could go to I can go to Oakland Airport. You get prime parking.
I know. You get to park right.
You get the best.
Right now, in a lot of places,
you get the best.
Number one reason to do all electric or plug in or whatever is you get to use the HUV lanes, the high occupancy vehicle lanes, and you get to park right in front.
So the 2012 Focus, which is almost out, the Ford Focus Electric, no gas engine at all, fully charges in 3 to 4 hours when you get that 240 volt. It'll charge on your regular plug in, but it takes longer.
Is it 240 or 440?
240.
Okay.
And it's Leviton makes these, and you can get it through the dealer. It's actually not a very complicated addition. It gives you a special plug that you plug into the car, and that'll charge it in 3 to 4 hours. So you can go home, have dinner, and be ready to go back out. Zero emissions. That's the advantage. You know, a hybrid's going to have some emissions. This is zero emissions. No CO, no CO2.
And if I had two cars, I would get one that's purely electric.
I love
like knowing
the idea
that I could go on a long trip, but I would get otherwise I'd get one that.
Yeah. Well, and this, you know, I was talking to Alan. This is one of the whole reasons they didn't do electric right away, is because what they want to do is make every car in the line. They actually figured out a way to make the assembly line 70% of all the cars the same. If you're making the Fusion, it's 70% is the same. When you get to the drivetrain, it's like you could push a button on the same assembly line, diesel, gasoline. He calls it petrol. Because around the world it's called petrol. It's only here. hybrid electric, all in the same assembly line across all of their product line. And the reason they do that is if you're in Iowa, you can't, you know, everything is more than 50 miles away. You need some kind of a gas engine. We don't do diesel much here anymore because diesel gas isn't any cheaper. It's more expensive. And regulatory emissions standards mean that diesel is not often sold here. But in other parts of the world, diesel is the way to go. So this idea is you make the car based on demand, based on what people need.
Here's a question for you. What year do you think it will get to a point where it's hard in California to find a petrol station?
That's an interesting question. It might not be more than 10 years away. If gas prices still go up like they're going?
2025. Where you start going, you know, I remember when it was, you could just go anywhere and you could find a petrol station or a gas station and they'll be like, now all there is plugs.
How much a liter is gas in the UK?
It's a lot more because they have a lot of taxes.
We have a guy from the UK who could actually answer this question.
It's about 129p a liter, I think, somewhere like that. Yeah, I think about 127 to 130p.
Okay, I'm going to ask the chat room to convert that to dollars per gallon. I have no idea what that is. 140
like $5 a gallon
per liter.
Is that about five a gallon?
And so how much? So do somebody in the chat room do some math. $8 to $9 a gallon.
Oh.
That, see, when it gets to that point here, you're going to watch a big transformation. Get ready, because it's going to get...
I was quiet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we're moving towards this. And I tell you what, I want an electric vehicle. That's why I'm on the waiting. The other thing for it's doing is these apps. So what happens is you've got the charger. So let's say you get home. You plug the car in. You have the app on the iPhone that tells you the state of the car. It's in the garage. It tells you the state of the car, the state of the charging. You can control... when you charge, so if, you know, your utilities, which most do now or are going to in California, we're about to start doing this, charge a lot more for peak hours and a lot less for off peak hours.
Right.
You say, don't charge it until this time.
Right.
You can, in the car, the GPS now has fastest, shortest, most eco-friendly, most efficient route, which I love. You can even precondition the battery from the smartphone. This is where you see Sync and MyFord Touch and the App Link all start to come together. You see this. What's going to happen is people are going to see, this. They planned this from the very beginning.
All right.
It was a strategy. I'm so excited about this. Regenerative braking, of course. So when you put your foot on the brakes, all that friction doesn't go just to heat. It goes to charging the battery. The lithium ion batteries allow topping off without reducing the life of the battery. There's the 240 volt. Don't you love how it goes circling around like that? So you know it's charging. I drove one of these, and that's so impressive. I want you to take a test drive. They'll be out very soon at a Ford dealer near you, or visit Ford.com/technology for more information. Ford is really, truly a 21st century car company.
They really need to lend me one of those for a week.
I know, me too. Well, I'll lend you mine when mine comes.
Right.
But I have to say, at CES, it was absolutely clear Ford was leading the way in all of this stuff. Absolutely clear. And I think that's just so cool.
Yeah.
I just love that. All right. So, Thursday, you're so excited about it. Tell us about it. Apple.
So, the rumors.
There's
an education. We know that there is publishing / education event happening in New York.
The invite says that, so it's not
right,
like...
So we know that. That's not a rumor.
Yeah.
The rumor is, what are they going to talk about? And the rumors that are building, there's a big, very large apple in the middle. It's the Big Apple.
The Big Apple. I love that.
At the Guggenheim Museum at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, so 7 a.m. here.
So we'll do breaking news, I guess. I guess we'll have to. Thursday, can we do that?
At 10 a.m. we can, yes.
No, at 7 a.m.
Oh, 7 a.m., yeah, I guess we can.
Eileen Rivera, you don't have to get up.
I'll get up. Sure.
I'll get up.
Well, you have a long day because that's the... this is Thursday. Never mind.
Yeah, tomorrow, when we'll talk about this at the end of the show, we're going to observe the blackout day, the SOPA blackout day. But we have a unique way of doing that, which you will see tomorrow.
So the rumor... is that Apple is going to release some kind of publishing system that makes it easier to publish to possibly the EPUB 3 format.
They call it the GarageBand of EPUB.
Yeah, that's what they're saying that it could be.
That's the rumor.
And that's what all of us have been talking about since the iPad came out. It's got to be easier to develop content for the iPad. And
what is the EPUB 3 standard? How does that, do you know anything about
what a change? Apple, the iBook standard right now is it's basically you can add stuff using HTML5 to add more interactivity, video, audio. So EPUB 3 is supposed to be actually adding a lot of that into the format. So you'll be able to have video, you'll be able to have interaction, you'll be able to have audio. I'm not sure exactly what else is in there.
Remember the Elements iPad app?
Yes.
So imagine being able to publish that as a book as opposed to a device-specific app.
Exactly. So that's perfect. So the question is that if Apple, the rumor right now is that Apple is definitely going to give some kind of publishing tool to the publishers, because right now it's still painful to do that level of interaction, which seems insane.
To authors as well.
But here's the thing, that's the question though, is are they going to do that? Because it seems odd that they're having all these big publishers who are about to have their guts ripped out. you know, showing up with them at the event. So I wonder how much democratization Apple's going to give us immediately, because, and I hope it's all of it, but I just feel like, how do these publishers, how are they not just completely terrified? Maybe they're coming out of terror, but how are they not terrified of the fact that this completely cuts the publisher out of this loop?
I'll tell you, if it becomes easy to publish. If you're a web designer studying HTML5 and CSS right now, you're in the catbird seat, because that's the standards that this uses. The audio and video are through HTML5's audio and video tags. CSS is being used. CSS3 is being used for all the design. Another multimedia feature is the inclusion of media overlay documents. When pre-recorded narration is available for a publication, media overlays provide the ability to synchronize the audio with the text of the document.
Right.
I love that.
Yeah.
I've always wanted that with my audiobooks, you know?
Right.
Amazon could do this. I wish they would.
And so, and hopefully, if it's true that there's going to be a garage band, quote unquote, for EPUB, you know, to develop for the iPad or for iBooks, it would be, if it really is that easy, and it could be. I mean, you look at Pages could almost do that right now. I mean, Pages almost has the tools that you would need, because you can insert movies and everything else.
All you have to do is add a plugin, an export plugin.
Yeah, and if you look at iWeb, you know, which was a disaster on the web.
EPUB will also support scripting using HTML5 and SVG. Scripting can be disabled if you want security. Text-to-speech will be in there. Sounds like a really great format.
Yeah, I mean, so many pieces of this have been sort of converging with each other. Pages actually already is a really good ebook builder. I believe they have some problems with conformity, but in terms of going from document to fairly sophisticated format EPUB document, there are a bunch of people who use that as the first step of their workflow. Then they go in back in and they might hack the style sheets a little bit to make it look a little bit more like a book and less like a converted document. But they've been certainly moving towards this for quite some time. There are plugins for Automator and that automate a lot of that process as well. If you want to look at this as sort of a in one way as a Death Star sort of weapon for the iBook store. Right now, the iBook store is kind of languishing because there's just no compelling reason to go with the iBook store instead of with the Kindle store. If they were to build a product that allows publishers to put stuff in the iBook store that is sophisticated, elegant, fast, so that people who own the rights to their own content can quickly turn a edited manuscript into a very professional looking book into the iBook store and make it marginally more difficult than printing, suddenly the iBook store has lots of content in it that's not available on the Kindle store.
Well, and I think that's really important, because I think that one of the issues about that is that the Kindle right now, one of the dangers of it, other than the Kindle Fire, but the other Kindles have the danger of holding back digital publishing because they are not sophisticated enough to really add the kind of, you know, they're fine, they're books, but it's kind of like they're still in the land of, we're going to put movie cameras and shoot people on stages and we're not going to move forward. And right now we're kind of stuck in that little world of, we're just going to read books on an electronic device, where what Apple, by creating this publishing, it could give Apple the opportunity to really push this down the path and basically, you know, push the older Kindles into obsolescence, which I think that wouldn't necessarily be bad for Amazon.
I think it would more force Amazon to finally adopt EPUB as their publishing standard. Right now, their Kindle book format, it uses elements of HTML. It uses technologies that are in standards that are familiar to web developers. But every time the world e-publishing community comes up with a great new standard like EPUB 3, Apple can be first in line to take advantage of that, whereas Amazon gets closer and closer to that monumental decision where they say that, okay, having our own proprietary format really is not working out for us. And if we don't want to have our lunch handed to us, we're just going to have to bite the bullet and upgrade to EPUB 3.
Yeah, my only concern for Thursday, though, is the fact that it's, you know, they have publicized it as an education event. Yep. So I'm sure the tools will come eventually. Whether or not they'll arrive on Thursday, I'm not too sure. I really envisage the tool sort of being part of the new iLife package when that hopefully turns up, once they've sorted out their iCloud integration, et cetera. So I think on Thursday, I think the big push is going to be around the textbook industry. And we all know from the Steve Jobs biography that, you know, that was something that Steve was actually working on. So for them to sort of get to bed with the publishers and an education event and being on the, in New York, I don't know. I would like to see the tools. I'm just a bit suspicious whether or not we will see them on Thursday.
But of course, well, I could say why you might want to if you were Apple. First of all the Kindles but the Fire cannot do all these multimedia things. The iPad does it beautifully, number one. Number two, if you are going to redefine textbooks, this is exactly, these are the features you would want to build into them.
Right.
So it would, it would make sense for Apple to offer tools for textbook publishers to encourage them to include multimedia and all of this. There are other solutions, by the way. EPUB's been around for a long time, and there are other solutions. The question was, will Apple make these tools available to the public?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the question.
Because then that then we got a little problem here.
but even if it's just for textbook publishing, that's a big win for Apple.
I agree.
The answer to every question, why are they getting into this business? The answer to that question for Apple is always to sell more hardware. They don't do iTunes to make money off of selling music or apps or anything like that. It's because they make the hardware, the high margin stuff, much, much more valuable. So if they suddenly make the iPad the absolute default computer to issue to everyone from third grade all the way into college, they can make a few bucks.
Well, and the thing is that a lot of these schools are right now having to make a decision about the fact. A lot of schools have been very slow to adopt real technology progress, and they are now at a point where they're going to have to make a decision about technology, and they have a lot of choices, and a lot of them are semi even. If you suddenly have this great publishing format and all this content and everything else that's available on the iPad, in some ways to the school, it almost becomes less expensive because you're now not dealing with all those books. You know, and I think that what we see right after this, but I think, in fact,
this is a big problem I have because they're not dropping the prices significantly on textbooks in an electronic format
currently,
and you are losing the resale value. It's actually costing more for these e-textbooks because you cannot resell them. It's actually in every experience I've had, both in secondary and upper education, it costs more because you don't have a resale. And that's a real. These guys have not dropped the prices. This is one reason the textbook companies are very happy to get in Apple's lap.
Just because it gets rid of
the used
market.
They make more money.
Rid of the used book market. I think that is the point. I think that in the long term, I mean, the short term, this gets into the whole media industry. In the short term, it's good for them. In the long term, you know, suddenly you have a lot of different ways of people publishing, you know, a lot of these pieces and getting full access. Whether Apple gives people full access at the beginning may change whether they give them full access down the road. But I think that Apple has an incredible opportunity right now to corner the education market again, like they did in the past, because suddenly, I mean, really,
if I were the textbook companies, I would just look at the recording industry.
Yeah.
And say,
short term versus long term. You just need to understand. You know, there's like Apple. The key to understand with Apple is Apple plays a very long game.
How long do you want to be in this business?
You know, So I think that's going to be a challenge. As I said at the beginning of the show, you know, we're building this school in Rwanda, and we threw a long pass where the entire school is built around iPads as the format that we're going to do all the training. Which was a little risky that's why I'm so excited about Thursday. It was a little risky. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to build a lot of stuff in FileMaker, you know, to make this all work. And it looks like hopefully we'll get access to the tools that we need to kind of help flesh all that stuff out. But I think that I think it really puts Apple in the driver's position because I think it's going to be very hard for anyone else to build these after Apple has gone down that path. And,
right.
You know, and I think that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's,
which is why the textbook industry should think twice. Before they give Apple a monopoly. I mean, the key here is Apple's going to try to get a monopoly.
Oh, they're going to try to make it so that every student, you know, and right now the iPad, I will say, is the best solution to hand students.
Right now.
And if they go down this path.
A Transformer Prime could very well be the best solution because it has a keyboard.
Now, if it's an open format, if it's an EPUB format, EPUB 3 format, theoretically, you could do it on a lot of, you know, things. Although it still will push the hardware because you're still developing all that content in some area.
I think we'll watch with great interest to see what Apple announces on Thursday.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that this is a huge. I mean, I just think that it's really hard to describe how big it is because it's not just education. It may start in education, but what we're talking about is a long-term development of it being easy for authors to build interactive, the next generation of book. We're moving away. You know, we're taking people off the stage. We're taking the cameras off the tripods. We're starting to do things that are, you know, that are really moving the content conversation forward from these old books and where we can, you know, we're going to look back. This is when, if this publishing becomes easy, this is where the fork happens, where there's the old fashioned books that are, you know, really just on paper and really only have one way to enjoy them, to these multimedia experiences that happen to have text in them as well.
Mm. It's exciting. It's very exciting.
I think it'll be more exciting if it helps to further decentralize publishing. If it just means that independent people, everywhere from the person who's got a novel in the drawer to the person who has a contract and a successful audience for their writing, if this gives them the impetus to simply say, why am I bothering with a large publisher and settling for 15% of the cover price when actually I can spend one weekend learning how to use this iWork style tool and then put it toward all my audience members who happen to have iPhones and iPads, which might be a very solid chunk of their readership. And if this thing spreads to other devices, this is part of that migration away from centralized publishing and more towards individuals creating their own audiences and selling directly to them.
And I could see it. I could see it being a GarageBand and then also a, you know, Final Cut Pro version, you know, like an iMovie version of it that's easy for everybody to use. Yeah. And then the publishers having their own version that gives them more tools.
InDesign level.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to want that. They're not going to be satisfied with a GarageBand.
Well, there's a lot of things that you want to add. So you'd want to add class interaction and some really heavy tools that would be more complicated than just throwing a movie into it that you might add into a tool that you might sell for $300 or $500 or $1,000.
Right. All right, rumor time. I'd like to save this for the end. iPad 3 will have a Retina display. True or false?
True. And combined with the announcement that we're seeing it on the 19th, that's a big deal.
True, Andy?
I agree.
Retina display 10.1 inches?
I'm not sure if it's going to be 10.1 inches. I believe it'll be the same aspect ratio as the current generation iPad. I think it's just going to be a higher definition. I am not 100% sure it's going to be the same price point. I think this is going to be the open door towards something that I was talking about last year, where there's going to be a more expensive iPad and a less expensive iPad that has the previous generation technology.
Mr. Don McAllister, you agree? True or false? Yeah. Retina display.
Completely agree. I'm with Andy as well. I think now is the time they're going to start sort of differentiating between the standard iPad and the iPad Pro. And the iPad Pro will be the more expensive model with the Retina display and, you know, quad processors possibly and extra RAM, et cetera. So
you guys are all wrong. It's not going to be a Retina display because if they do, they'll fragment the developer market and it'll be a nightmare to have to design for now three resolutions. Never happen.
Not necessarily.
Oh, you have a way around that?
Just like the Retina display fragmented previous iPhones did it. Oh, wait, no, it did not. It did not do such a thing.
Why not?
Same applications, but merely running at much, much easier to read text, much, much better photos. Eh.
All right, we'll see.
Funny how these things work, eh?
I know. And by the way, it'll probably be true or false. March?
March.
March?
I'm seeing markers for March, yes.
March?
Yeah.
Oh, you're all right on that one. quad core. Okay, here's it. We agree on quad core. LTE. True or false, Don McAllister? Will it have 4G?
False.
True or false, Andy Iannotko? 4G.
I honestly do not know. I've seen evidence. Whereas when I say Retina display, I have seen markers that indicate that such a thing is going to happen very soon. LTE, I have not seen such markers, but the absence of such markers does not indicate absence of such a product coming in the future.
So maybe. Your answer is maybe.
Maybe, sure.
How about you, Alex Lindsay?
LTE true, 4G no.
Well, LTE is 4G. What the hell are you talking about?
BS.
What are you,
4G-ish.
You nuts? Oh, you mean 4G-ish. Like real 4G?
Yeah,
like 100 megabit
4G? It's not going to be 4G.
Well, no, of course not. There's nobody in America that can offer 100 megabit
4G. So LTE, yes.
LTE.
4G, no.
Pseudo 4G. American 4G. US
exactly.
4G.
Exactly.
I think you guys are, yes, right. And I'll tell you one thing that's kind of an interesting statement came from Verizon at CES. They said, we will no longer sell any device that doesn't have LTE.
Except for push to talk.
Does Verizon do push-to-talk?
I think they said they did. I think there was some kind of... There's one solution that they had. But
so unless they do a push-to-talk iPad, it's got to be LTE.
I'm not sure because Verizon doesn't have their corporate communications as under a tight lasso as Apple does. They could be talking about... This could be a spokesperson who's not completely in the loop about what Apple's going to be doing in the future. And it's possible that they could also waffle later on and say, well, technically the iPhone we create as a different product category. It's not a phone. It's more of a communication device. So I don't know if that's a slam dunk.
Bloomberg says Apple's bringing LTE to the iPad before the iPhone because it's got a bigger battery.
True. Yeah, that I could definitely believe.
Makes sense.
I think Apple would only do 4G LTE if they could do it in a way that would be free, quote unquote. If there has to be a real trade off for the user, they wouldn't do it.
One more rumor I'm hearing: thicker because double the battery life. True or false, Don McAllister?
Yeah, we keep hearing rumors about it being slightly thicker because of the battery increase in the battery size, because they'll need a bigger battery as well for the Retina display. So, I wouldn't surprise me to see it go slightly thicker.
Will the battery life go up or will it just maintain?
Possibly up slightly. It depends how thick they can actually make it and get away with, really. But at the moment, I think the current iPad is slightly too thin as far as I'm concerned. I'd like to have a bit more heft.
You agree, Alex Lindsay?
I would love to see it a little thicker, actually.
Thicker?
I think that the iPad right now is... I feel like it's more lasting. Fragile. Yeah.
Thicker and longer. Annie Yannacco, do you believe in the Viagra iPad, thicker and longer lasting?
I was going to say, we have a show title, finally. I think that Apple will happily make the iPad thicker if it will give tangible benefits. I'm not sure that they're married to having the paper thin, roll it up and stick in your back pocket iPad at this juncture.
Does that mean you have to take it back to the Apple store if it's running for more than 4 hours?
See your doctor. I am going to go on the limb here and say we will have a push-to-talk iPad in March. No, I'm just kidding.
And an extendable antenna.
Yay!
Hello, Billy.
Yay!
This is Tommy.
I can totally hear
you from 2 yards away.
The crystal ball is a little foggier for an iPhone 5, although if they're going to do an iPhone... Remember, when they first announced the iPhone, they announced it in January for June release. They squeezed that time way down on the last iPhone.
That was an FCC issue.
Yeah. So what do you think? Will we see an iPhone in June or thereabouts?
Maybe.
New iPhone?
I don't have any. I'm not.
No clues on that. Anybody else? Clues?
I'm guessing.
So they're going to have to bring something big out for WWDC, aren't they? That's the, that's the major event for June. Possibly.
Andy?
I'm guessing that they're going to wait. I think they would show it off in June and not commit to a June ship date.
Let's do September.
That's just a guess. I'm not sure if the September release of the 4S was a one off or more of a here's what this will do to our production schedule and the stress on our employees if we stop trying to put all the announcements in the first half of the year. So I also think. Flip a coin and say yes.
I think I was talking to Tom about this at CES when we were talking to manufacturers about why there's so much stuff for the iPhone and so much and not as much stuff for the Android. One of the big things was the fragmentation. No, it was shelf life. The fact that the iPhone form factor doesn't change very often makes it much easier. It's fragmentation of the market. And the two big things were fragmentation of the market and shelf life were the two largest things. And then after that, it was that iPhone users will buy crazy stuff.
Actually, we just saw some stats from Tango, which makes an iPhone and Android VoIP program. Mm-hmm. And even though they've slowed slightly more Tangos for Android, the upsell is like four times higher on the iPhone. Mm-hmm. iPhone users are 400% more likely to buy the next level up. They spend more money on their apps. Not because they're more affluent. I don't know if that's the case, but...
They're just crazy.
They'll buy anything. We're going to take a break. When we come back, our Lion tip, our iOS tip, and our picks of the week with this great panel. Andy Yannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times, Don McAllister from Screencasts Online, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps, and I come to you from the future.
The future.
Where everybody listens to audiobooks all the time.
We heard of this thing called text.
Yes. What is it? What is a print volume?
They used to have this thing in the paper, and they would take ink and put it on the paper.
You know, they used to kill trees so that you could read a book? They used to kill trees. Now they just kill electrons.
Yes.
At audible.com. Audible, 100,000 books. In the future, it'll be more. But right now, it's 100,000 books. I'm going to go out on a limb and say, in the future, there will be more books on Audible.
I think that's not very much. That's not a very thin
actually.
Limb.
You know what's really happened is now every bestseller that comes out is on Audible day and date.
Are you like me? Like I see a new book come out and I go, "Oh, is it on Audible?" And
first thing
like,
I do.
Oh no,
I check.
Never mind.
You notice I have zero credits. I'm waiting till the 22nd when my two credits kick in. I love Audible, and I know you will too. That's why we've arranged a free book for you at audible.com/MacBreak. You'll be signing up for the gold account. That's one book a month. First month is free. First book is free. You get a credit. Some books are more than one credit. Very few. And it's yours to keep forever. You cancel at any time, so there could be no cost to you. Now, Andy Yannacco, like all of us, is a major Audible fan. He loves to have an Audible pick of the week, and I'm going to let him do it.
This is another good one. But I have to explain, audiobooks are a special sort of beast. It's not just the book itself, which is also available on Kindle. It's also available on iBooks. It's also available in Dead Treeware. But it's also like, who is the person reading this, and how much fun are you going to have listening to this person in your car for 10 hours?
Now, normally I would say don't get the author to read it because most authors can't read it. This is a major exception.
I will give you the title, which will not impress you, and then the name, which will cause you to buy this book. The title is The Elephant to Hollywood. The reader is the author, Michael Caine.
Oh, all right. Alfie reads it. Let's hear. Exactly. I gotta hear this.
Wife Micheline and Sydney and Joanna Poitier. It was a fabulous group to spend a holiday with.
Oh my God!
I don't ski, but I have really worked hard at developing my après-ski skills.
I love Michael Caine.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to spend 10 hours with him in my ears.
My favorite part. Also, you know, he is for real. He is for real, Michael Caine. You get to the story where he's saying, "Of course, I was poor back then. We used to have these parties called Bottle and a Bird." Well, you go, you come, you bring a bottle and a bird. I didn't have much money, so I brought two birds. You're like, oh, this is great. By 4 hours in, it's like, hello, I'm here to pick up my dry cleaning. I dropped two shirts and a tie 4 days ago.
You're good. All you have to do is listen to this, and you'll be able to do Michael Caine, a perfect Michael Caine.
She was only 16 years old. He's an actor. He's also like came to prominence like in the 60s and 70s. So he has all these really great drunk actor stories.
Stories
of like going to the Cannes Film Festival with John Lennon. That's money in the bank right there. But really, you're there to hear Michael Caine talk to you for 10 hours straight.
It's done. Sold.
Done again.
So look, folks.
Anyone with common sense, as soon as you said Michael Caine narrates an audiobook, there you go.
Let's hear a little bit more.
What Aspen is all about. As we sat around enjoying the sunshine, gossiping about old times and eating fabulous food with this great group of people, I felt pretty happy with my lot. Everyone there had been a part of my life since I first got to Hollywood. Although, in fact, I'd met Sean in London back in the late 1950s.
Michael Caine, The Elephant to Hollywood. And I'm sure he explains the title at some point. You know, they have a lot of showbiz titles. Dick Cavett, his memoirs. Dick Van Dyke, his memoirs. Rob Lowe just came out with one. And in many cases, when you get an actor, you got to get them to narrate the book because that's their voice, you know. And the good news is
this book is mostly about his Hollywood years on upward. It's not that you don't get to hear.
I don't want
to
hear
3 hours about my favorite school teacher is Mrs. Malmerson.
Yeah.
We would learn these following 19 subjects. First, history. Yeah. Then math. Then geography. Then, okay, thank you. Please get to the cocktail party where you wind up naked in the pool with Sophia Loren. Please get that story.
Please. Please. The Elephant to Hollywood. You can get this for free. All you got to do is go to audible.com/MacBreak. Sign up for the gold account. First month's free. First book's free. Yours to keep forever. Cancel at any time. Come on. Enough said. If we had more books like this, I wouldn't have to do ads for Audible. Actually, we do. We have lots of them. 100,000. Audible.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. And now, let us do our iOS tip of the week. Maybe we should let... Do you want to do this or should I let Don do this?
I'm happy to let Don do it.
Don's doing a whole new thing on iOS on Screencast Online. You've got an iOS channel.
Indeed. Yes, we have. Yeah. I basically what I've done is to take the iPad app that I've got, because I've got apps in the App Store now as well. I've taken the iPad app and chopped it into, I think, about 20 chapters. So they're the first sort of 20 episodes that you can download. But a quick tip. Mobile Safari. Again, I don't know if you've covered this before, but in Safari now on iOS, you've got tabbed browsing.
Yes.
And you can create tabs, and obviously you can close the tabs as well. If you actually tap and hold on the plus symbol at the end of the tab row, you'll actually get a pop-up that will show you all your recently closed tabs. So you can tap on that and reopen the tab again.
It's like history.
Yeah, it's like a tab history. So any tabs that you closed recently, it remembers them. Tap and hold on the button at the end of the tab row, and it will give you a pop-up with a list of the tabs that you've closed recently.
Very cool.
Hmm.
Press that and hold. Because that's one of those things where I'm sure they document it somewhere, but it's kind of hard to find.
Yeah, I've not. I don't know where I came across that one. It's not something I'd seen around very often. But it's a nice little tip, especially if you like me, you open lots of tabs and then close them down again, and then say, "Ooh, what was that URL I wanted?" It's like a history for your tabs.
There is a great BBC show which you've probably seen called The Trip.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Coogan. Yes. Steve Coogan's in it.
Oh yeah.
There's a moment. Yes.
That's good.
Chat room just reminded me of this.
I actually haven't seen The Trip. I have seen this moment.
There is a moment where they debate. This is the first episode. Steve and his
They're going on a road trip.
They debate who has the better Michael Caine impression, Steve Coogan or Rob Brydon. We'll talk about that. It's taking a little while to load. So once it's loaded, I'll play it for you. Meanwhile, let's get a lion tip from Andy Anatko.
This is actually a Mac OS tip. It works in previous versions of it as well. A lot of people know that Command Shift 3 is for screen capture. It will create a picture of your entire screen and dump it to the disk. A lot of people also know that Command Shift 4 will let you select part of the screen to capture. And that's very nice. That's very good. But there are two little tricks that make it a lot more useful, particularly if you're off in the habit of, like, if you see something really cool on the web and you just want to send it to someone via iChat, you can, if you hold down the control key with control shift, either one of those things, it will send the graphic to the clipboard instead of to a file on the disk. The other cool thing is if you're using Command Shift 4, if you hit Command Shift 4, that puts you into screen capture mode. You'll get the crosshairs so you can draw the box around the thing that you actually want to capture. If you then hold down, if you then just tap the space bar, instead of the crosshairs, you'll now get a camera icon that will actually understand that, okay, he's hovering over a window. If he clicks on that window, I'll just capture that window. And I'll even add a cool little drop shadow to it for good measure. So that works. The capture just single window works whether you're using.
I never knew that.
Controller. Yep. As a matter of fact, this was making the it first. I think appeared. I think with 10.5. I know because I, David Pogue, and another author were all like writing our OS books at the same time, and we've been beaten up by Apple pretty badly with like late updates. And suddenly, like, have you tried this? Do you know how fast you can do screenshots with this? Oh, my God. No, I didn't. Here, let me tell you. Oh, my God. You're right. That does work. So, yeah.
That is awesome. Command Shift 4 to do the clip, and then hit the space bar, and you'll get a camera.
Just tap the space bar, right.
And you'll get it all. And now it is time, my friends, for our picks of the week. We'll start, since Sandy and Don did tips, we'll start with you, Alex Lindsay. What have you brought us?
So I have this.
What the hell is that?
Well, first of all, before I get into the hardware, the one thing, I don't think we've talked about it on MacBreak. I know you guys have talked about it on iPad today. Snapseed, if you haven't gotten it, just go out and buy it.
Love it.
That's all I got to say.
It's an iPad, iOS app that is just the best filters ever.
It's the best photo app ever.
It's from Nick Software. That's why it's so good.
Insane.
I have a camera for you, Alex, right? Do you see where your coffee mug is?
Oh.
If you want to show whatever you're...
Yeah, look at wow. That. You guys are so good.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So,
Wow.
Let me see. Snapseed.
It's a modern production.
So what you can do is you can take any photo. Here's an example photo. But it just has lots of little filters that lets you start to, you know, you can. It's just like this great way you can just kind of drag on it and have, you know, and take, you know, just kind of do some really, really quick effects. And, you know, we can go back and, you know, I can open. Let me open one here from my photo library just to kind of show you the. My daughter, I took one photo of her kind of, you know, this is what it looked like. Oh, I don't even need it here. It's really easy to do the effects. I just want to show you the before and after. So I took a photo that was like this, right? So it's just her in a crazy Russian thing she was running around in. And in like 2 seconds, I was posting it on Path, and in like 2 seconds, I turned it into that.
That's, you know, beautiful.
Which was this kind of just artsy kind of.
That is beautiful. I don't know how you did that, but that's good.
And it was just like bam, bam, bam. And I mean, literally, like with less than a minute, I had this thing that looks kind of this kind of artsy little painting almost. It's kind of hard to see in the image, but you can see her eyes in there. And it's just, anyway, it's amazing. Of course, as everything else, it's $2.99 or whatever, so it's worth it. This is what I actually wanted to show, though. So I just wanted to say that.
All right.
Is the Skosh Fit Rail. So I've been in this mode of trying to find the right rail for my exercise bike, so that I could, you know, I can do proper multitasking.
Right.
So what this is this folds up into almost nothing. So you can bring it together and you want to take it, be able to take it to the exercise bike. I have one in my house, so I don't. So it's tiny. See, tiny. But what you do is you swing this open and you put it over top of the exercise bike. You unwrap this and you can open it up like this. And then, so this little guy here is your, this hooks over top of your exercise bike and allows you to put your iPad right into this little groove here. And this stuff here is sticky. So it's got kind of like a little, I don't know, it's nano technology or whatever makes it sticky. So so anyway, what's great about it is you can take it to the gym with you. I just put it on my bike, but it hooks on really well. It's very stable. And if you want to be able to use, like, the perfect solution for me is you're able to watch the news or watch Netflix and then use Flipboard and bike. And I kind of need to do that because I get really bored with biking. So, and I try to bike a lot.
Something to
and
do, so, anything to do.
Yeah. And so it turns into like the perfect multitasking kind of situation. It's the Skosh Fit Rail, and it's, I think, $49 is the retail. And, you know, I have gone through a lot of ways of doing this, and this is by far the best one that I found.
So awesome. Anyway, thank you so much.
That's it. That's all I have to say.
Andy Anako, would you like to do a pick here?
Yeah, this is a simple one, but a simple idea, but a really great one. This is the Popa remote camera, the Popa camera thingamabob.
Yeah, what is that?
That looks so cool.
It's cool.
What it is yeah. It's just all it is like a metal machine handle with a button and a dock connector on it. And you click it onto the end of your iPhone.
Yeah.
And now you actually get just a regular big ass camera button. For taking pictures with the iPhone.
And it's also
a big camera handle with a tripod mount. So if you're actually one of these people who uses the iPhone just as a camera and you're in a situation like you're at a party or you're in the Smithsonian, this is not going to drop out of your hands. This is not going to, you know, you're not going to have to worry about if you're basically trying to hold it at sort of a weird angle. You are going to be able to get the shot without trying to figure out exactly where the mechanical shutter button is. On the screen, it feels like $1 million. You also have a tripod mount. It also comes with a lanyard, so you can actually keep it like lanyarded to your hand. I was at the Mac Tech conference. We did a tour of Universal Studios and the motion ride where you go past the Jaws shark and you go through the King Kong 3D like rotating tunnel. And believe me, it was not a lot of fun holding onto my slippery little iPhone with both hands as the boat was rocking. With this, it's pretty much the perfect.
How secure do you feel like it? Is it really in there?
This is not coming out. As a matter of fact, it comes off. I am literally trying hard to pull it off.
That's great. That would actually be really handy.
Get it off. Yeah. Also, it's nicely designed too. Like, obviously, this is going to be when you have this docked on here, you're not going to be able to fit it inside your camera case. You're not your iPhone case. You're not going to be able to fit in a lot of things. They kind of anticipate that you're probably going to be taking it on and taking it off. So I'm going to have to zoom in for this here. Around the tripod mount is this little grip right here. And so when it's time to put it back in your pocket, oh goodness, no autofocus. There you go. Watch what happens. There you go.
Oh, look at that.
And now the dock connector is stowed away because you twisted it closed.
That's clever. Cool.
So, this guy's thought of everything.
Very clever.
Has three drawbacks, which I'll go through 1 through 3. It does not work with the built-in camera app. You have to use the Popa app, which is, of course, a free download from the App Store. Yeah, I don't know why that doesn't work. I keep trying to figure out whether or not... I really wish it were possible so that when this thing is docked, the act of pressing this button causes that app to become the forward thing so that I can understand why you can't just always, no matter what app you're in, when you click this button, it takes a picture. But I would love it if you tap the button once. If it's not the foreground app, Popa becomes the foreground app, and then it becomes your camera button. So I've been talking to a couple of iOS developers to find out if that's even physically possible with the app development kit. I've been getting a response of sort of maybe it depends. It's not well documented, so who knows. The third problem is a little bit more serious in that I guess to get this to fit so tightly, the fit is a little bit hit or miss in that once it's taking pictures, it works fine for me, especially since I updated to the last version of the app. However, there are times when if I just simply grab this out of my shirt pocket, flip open to the camera app and take a picture, it won't actually work. And it won't work until I undock and then dock it back in again. So that's not one, it's not a majority of the cases of the time, but it has happened often enough that that's a problem. Given that in those scenarios where I have to do a quick draw, there's no such thing as a quick draw because I'll have to wake up the, I'll still have to wake up the iPhone, switch to the POPA app, and then be ready to take a picture. I don't think that it's a deal breaker as much as it could be, but that's still something that I also wish that they would improve on for the future. But given what this is, and this is not a cheap piece of plastic, it really does feel like an old, the grip of an old fashioned like 35 millimeter rangefinder camera. Also, given that I really hope to see more accessories like this, that now that we have a really very competent 8 megapixel camera that you could use as a substitute for a real camera, I really, there's more to a camera than just the quality of the pictures it takes. It's also the way that you handle it. It's also the way that you can grab it without being scared of dropping the thing. And so I'm really hoping that there are more devices like this. It works okay for what it is right now. It could work better. The third problem, actually, though, is that it is 50 pounds.
It's ridiculously expensive.
Well, it's a one
that?
Of a kind.
That's 70, 80 bucks?
About 72, 73 according to current.
Depending on the day.
Worth mentioning, there are going to be people that really, really want something exactly like this. I'm hoping that people who spend 50 pounds for this will helps to subsidize the Generation 2 version of this that they have not announced. I'm saying that a hypothetical Generation 2, which is more like a traditional camera sled maybe, or really prosecutes this idea a little bit more strongly. Also, it's really cool because I've decided that if I'm ever in a really tricky situation where like people are advancing upon me, I'll take this out like just as is and say, well, this is the dead man switch. If my grip releases upon this, the entire room blows. So,
or at least my iPhone.
I'll back off.
Popa from Everything Beep. .com. A mere 50 pounds. And now...
The UK has got economic troubles, too. If you're putting more money into the UK economy, you're being a good global citizen.
Yeah, that's okay.
War of 1812 was so long ago, Leo. It's time to forget.
And now, from the other side of the pond, Mr. Don McAllister with his pick of the week.
Okay, well, it's a very simple application. It's an application for the Mac. I don't know about you, but I tend to do most of my writing now in plain text. I'm a big Markdown fan, and I do most of my writing in Byword, which is a plain text editor that has really good Markdown support. And if I come across an application where I need to do some writing in, I ended up sort of copying from one application, pasting it into Byword, and then do my editing, and then copy it and pasting it back into the application it came from. But there's an application called Quick Cursor that automates that process. It's a very simple concept. It only supports a limited number of word processors, but Byword is one of them. Things like BB Edit it supports. I think it supports... there's a whole list on the Mac App Store page. But basically what you do is you set up a global hotkey. So whenever you have a text entry field anywhere that you want to do some writing in, you basically just hit the hotkey, and it takes the contents of that text entry field and pastes it into your text editor of choice. You do your editing, and then when you finish editing, it drops it back into the original text entry panel. So it's sort of like a global word processor for all your applications. Wherever you need to enter text, you can actually use your favorite word processor to actually do that.
That's interesting.
It's hard to explain, but once you've used it a couple of times, especially if you have a favorite text editor, you know, plain text editor that you use, and you're more comfortable with writing in, it works really, really well. It's by Hogbait Software.
Yeah, Jesse does great stuff. I love Jesse, and I love supporting him. He wrote Right Room.
That's right. In fact, he wrote it for Right Room because he wanted to do that sort of thing. You know, he was used to writing in Right Room, so he wanted a bridge to any other applications where he had to enter text. So he built it, and then he just expanded on it and published it as Quick Cursor.
Aquamax, BB Edit, Byword, COD Editor, Emacs, Espresso, Mac, Vim, Multi Markdown Composer, Smultron, Subethethet, Edit, TextMate, Text Wrangler, and Right Room all are supported. Yep.
Huh. And editors can actually amend their applications to make it work with it as well if they want to. I think he's published some guidance on how you actually amend your text editor to work with it.
And you use it with which editor do you like to use?
I use Byword. I tend to use Byword a lot for plain text editing. You know, sort of it's got great Markdown support.
Markdown would be handy.
It's very good.
Might have to try this. That is $4.99 in the U.S. Quick Cursor.
£2.99.
$2.99 in the UK. And that does it for our Mac Break Weekly. I want to thank you so much, Don, for being here. We'll see you at Mac World. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So I'll definitely see you at the Twit meetup on the Thursday at in the Intercontinental. I'll be there. But I'll see you around the show floor, and we shall say hello.
Yeah. We'll be doing our show, iPad Today, on Thursday afternoon. I think Andy's going to pop in for that. And then, yeah, the cocktail party is 6 p.m. at the Intercontinental Hotel, which is just around the corner from Macworld Expo. Yep. Of course, Don is at Screencasts Online, and he has a special code, 30% off, if you would like to join Screencasts Online. Just use the offer code MacBreak.
Well, if you go to screencastonline.com/MBW, I've changed the code because it's a new system. So you'll see the code on there.
Got it. Screencastonline.com/MBW.
Yep.
Got it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Don. See you in the States in just a little bit. Don,
yep, travels see you in a week.
Lot. Yeah. Cool. Andy Nocco is at the Chicago Sun-Times. He's also at the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth. And he's also wearing a metallic robot costume, but don't worry, we'll light his cigarettes for him.
It's a very natural robotic costume.
We will see you in just a little bit at Macworld Expo. Can't wait. Thank you, Andy. We're going to do a regular Mac break on Tuesday, and then we'll do iPad Today for Macworld Expo. We don't want to move the show date so much, and especially since nowadays there aren't many announcements there. It's just a fun show to go to.
Yeah.
Yeah,
if you're in the area, and it's definitely worth coming.
Especially
in.
The fan track, it's so much more affordable. You can just do that.
Yeah,
you get to see all the expo and a lot of fan stuff, including Andy doing his fan thing. are both your presentations in the fan track? The South Park and the Lion presentation.
South Park is in the fan track. I'm not sure where the Lion presentation is, though.
Okay.
The one I'm doing is one of the tech talks. That's included in the iFan Pass, though. I think you can get all the tech talks as well. Yeah.
The iFan Pass sounds like the way to go. MacworldExpo.com. Yeah. Of course, there's more professional tracks and so forth as well. Alex Lindsay is the professional. He is at pixelcore.com. What are you doing Thursday? Anything exciting?
You do
your live stuff.
I'm doing Thursday. Thursday night, yeah.
What are you doing Thursday? I wasn't asking you out. I was just wondering
Leo, I think you'll be a little forward there.
Hey, what are you doing Thursday?
We have Mark Spencer and Mark Spencer and Steve are in from Ripple Training. From Steve Martin from Ripple Training. He's not the comedian.
Final Cut Pro.
They're doing a live shoot, and so they're going to be they're going to be doing a live green screen shoot all day, and I think
that's a great idea.
That's going to be streaming during the day to the PixelCore members, but we're going to have them also talking about stuff in the evening. So that'll be all happening on Thursday. And so definitely check that out.
How do people find out more about that?
They should go up to pixelcore.com/live at 6 o'clock tomorrow night. And if all goes well, last week we had a little, I was out of town and we had a little, some technical difficulties. Sometimes that happens. So so we do almost every Thursday night.
Yeah, you do it when you can.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely check it out, 6 o'clock. But it's pixelcore.com/live. And as I said, those guys will be in town. It should be a lot of fun.
See us at Macworld Expo either Thursday afternoon doing iPad Today or in the evening at 6 p.m. at the Intercontinental. We'll be there having lots of fun. And I'm looking forward to just kind of going around and seeing the stuff. I think IaaS is going to do Windows Weekly from here on Thursday, so I don't have to.
Let's ask him. I haven't actually asked him IaaS. Yet.
You're going to be doing it. Well, Tom can do it. Whoever wants to. Anybody can do it. I guess that's all there is to say. Tomorrow is a very important day for the internet community. It's our SOPA protest day. Many sites are going dark, including Wikipedia, Reddit, Tumblr. We are not going to go dark. We thought about it. I thought we could do a better job educating. So you'll see what we do tomorrow. We will certainly let you know. You will know when it's the minute you tune in that it is a blackout day. And we will cover the blackout day in detail with breaking news starting at 10:30 a.m. Pacific right before we go into security now. And we will have lots of anti-SOPA, anti-PIPA information all day long.
And no matter what happens tomorrow, remember that the time now is to pile on. It's phones, old-fashioned phones, and snail mail.
Yeah.
That's what you want to be doing, and you don't want to take look at this news like, oh, SOPA is slowing down or whatever. The time that now that we have some momentum, pile on. Make sure that they're clear. Yeah. And you did you see my post?
No, I haven't seen it. Is it on
It's on Google Plus.
Okay, good.
It's called, if you go to my post and you see the manifesto, because I think what we need to start thinking about beyond stopping SOPA and PIPA is building an organization that starts to pound the representatives that create these laws.
We need a pack.
We need a pack. Super pack. We need to take some money.
Why not?
And we need to show these guys what you can
Why
do.
Why not? Let's
what a bunch
do
of
it.
Internet folks can do. So if you're you know, plus it if you think it's a good idea, and if we get a high enough number, we'll start doing. We're already starting to talk about some stuff. So, but check out what I say there, and you can either agree or disagree. But it's at you can find me on Google Plus, and I posted it. It's called The Manifesto.
The Manifesto. I got it right in front of me, right there. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Now get back to work. Break time is over.